swallow. That's what the war of love is for. And all we were doing, we were vocalising the questions that all our generation were asking. But a lot of people thought, because we were asking the questions, we knew the answers.
How is it we are here on this path we walk?
Then the tide rushes in and washes my castles away.
And it's up to you, what won't you say?
I'm a melancholy man, that's all what I am.
Hello, I'm Graham Edge, drumming with the Moody Blues.
And I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues, in the studio for A Question of Balance.
I'm a very lonely man.
The Moody Blues were very different from the other British supergroups of the 1960s. The Beatles and the Stones, in the beginning anyway, were singles bands, and more importantly, they were celebrities. But the Moody Blues didn't have a single personality that fans or music writers could latch onto. Even as their albums were selling millions of copies, it's unlikely that any of the Moody Blues musicians would have been mobbed on the street or chased through hotel lobbies by screaming girls. That wasn't what the Moody Blues were all about. There was something about the Moodies that somehow made them seem more serious than other bands of the time. Perhaps it was the classical aspirations of their music, the complex orchestrations, or the cosmic tone of many of their lyrics early on. They were by choice an anonymous sort of band, looking more like college students than rock stars. The Moody Blues thought of themselves as musicians, not celebrities. Now, in spite of all that, the Moodies became one of the most popular rock bands Britain has ever produced. Year after year, they were right up there with the Beatles and the Stones, frequently outselling them both. By 1970, the Moody Blues had formed their own record label, Threshold Records, and released what was to become a number one album in the UK, number three in America, called A Question of Balance, featuring dense, lush arrangements of rock songs with up to 30 different musical instruments, from a band sporting all five members as songwriters and four of them trading lead vocals. The breakthrough success of 1967's Days of Future Past left the Moody Blues as the proverbial square peg in the round hole of the record business. Moody Blues bass player, singer, songwriter John Lodge explains to me in the studio.
The Days of Future Past, the Moody Blues still didn't sit into what was the norm, you know, either bubblegum or the pop or the hip pop. At the time, we were still into this progressive, psychedelic, underground, whatever name
nobody knew
could,
where we were.
Whatever name people could put to us. So the people in the record company couldn't really associate with us at all. And this is when Sir Edward Lewis realised that we'd sort of superseded what people were trying to put you in a little pocket about. And he suddenly realised that we didn't really belong anywhere amongst any of his acts. We were a different type of band. He's rung me at 6 o'clock on a Monday morning and said, "John, I know it's early." I said, "You're not kidding, it's early." But this very English gentleman,
"Hello, John, Edward Lewis here. I'd like to say that played the record to some of my colleagues and friends yesterday at dinner. Thoroughly loved it. Wonderful. Well done, chap. Well done."
Yeah.
And that would be it. I think it's emotion. I mean, an audience has to be moved by emotion. And whatever it is, whether it's heavy rock or rap or whatever, if you can move them, you've made your impact. And I think that's what the Moody Blues have tried to do.
Take my place, have my seat, it's for free.
Ride My Seesaw was a solid hit from the Moody Blues on their July 1968 album In Search of the Lost Chord, proving that the UK and European success of the hits Nights in White Satin and Tuesday Afternoon was no fluke. As so often is the case, John Lodge and Moody Blues drummer Graham Edge said that they were certainly no shortage of people suddenly claiming credit.
The amazing thing is what happened after Days of Future Past. The amount of people in the record company who had ignored us, refused everything at all to do with us, the amount of people that turned up and decided it was them who had instigated the album was unbelievable. And when you think, you know, literally they realised we were living in Holland, in Belgium and Paris at the time. That's where we were writing the album. And we were up, you know, I mean, really were beg, stealing and borrowing, selling equipment to keep alive, literally, so we could write this our own stage show. And the people that turn up afterwards and said, well, we were part of that. You say, what part? You know, tell me what part. Where were you when we were dividing $10 up on the bed to try and find out who could eat? You know, and you know, the car's running out of gas, so you have to walk or take a bus.
And, of course, we'd got our third album on release when in the America, which is the big market, when Days of Future Past really burst here. It had sold enough so that people wouldn't, you know, record companies would remain interested. But we'd actually done In Search of the Lost Chord, and we were just releasing Threshold when Nights got to number one here, and the album shot right up. So there was this sort of, we were very big in Europe, but it had sort of grew quite slowly in America. So we had plenty of, it didn't come with that crack of thunder that 10 years working for the overnight success, you know. We kind of bled into it.
I think also as well, we when we came over on our first tour of America, I mean, obviously we'd been working in England as the Moody's and sort of pre-Moody's for 10 and 12 years before then. So we came across to America in 68 for the first major tour. And we were over here for about 3 or 4 months. And we were just picking up shows. We had two major gigs. We had the Fillmore East at sort of at the beginning of the tour and the Fillmore West at the end of the tour. And we had to try and fill in. I mean, literally, that's what the tour
was.
U-Haul trucks and whatever.
Playing in clubs. Didn't quite play behind Chicken Wire, but they should have been.
Thank you.
Lovely to See You, written and sung by Moody Blues guitarist Justin Hayward, was another UK and European hit on the early 1969 album On the Threshold of a Dream. By now, the Moody Blues were rising fast, enough to land a slot on a premiere stage in 1970, according to John Lodge.
I remember we did that, actually, at the Isle of Wight Festival with Joan Baez and, I think, Bob Dylan, wasn't it?
Bob Dylan
and the band, the Isle of Wight. Sink the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight is an island just south of England, it hasn't got many people live there. It's quite a large island, you know, in comparison to what England's normally got. And they put about 250,000-300,000 people on the island for this festival. Yeah. And it was like the British Woodstock. But it was absolutely, the weather was fantastic. And I remember we went on just as the sun was setting. Mm-hmm.
To Our Children's Children's Children was the second Moody Blues album to come out that year, and the third to incorporate both the psychedelic influences of the unfolding drug culture as well as the Eastern philosophy of transcendental meditation. Here's Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues.
I think we were always seeking for some kind of enlightenment, you know, as a whole generation was. But I think we were probably doing it harder than a lot of other people. And it came from a lot of the things that we were reading and people that we were meeting. I think the nature of the music that we were making opened a lot of doors for us with people in general. And we met a lot of very interesting people who were interested in our music and the things that we were doing. And it was rather different to a normal kind of rock group, really, the kind of areas that we were moving into. And there was, for me, there was the whole psychedelia thing of LSD and the literature around that and the ritual around it, then transcendental meditation, along with a lot of other a hodgepodge of stuff that, you know, that you make up really when you're young and forms part of your beliefs, really. And but it was like being a kind of sponge to all of these ideas and then reflecting them back. And each one of those songs for me that we were doing at the time is straight from the heart, and it's a pure reflection of a kind of innocence, if you like, you know, that was tapped straight into and given a clear inspirational performance in the studio and on record.
A gypsy of a strange and distant time, traveling in panic, all directions blind, aching with the warmth of a burning sun, freezing in the emptiness of where he come from.
Emptiness away come from.
Gypsy was a Justin Hayward song on November 1969's To Our Children's Children's Children by the Moody Blues. It was a hit everywhere but in the U.S. When we return, John Lodge, Justin Hayward, and Graham Edge pose a musical question. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and visit inthestudio.net for more in-depth interviews of your favorite rock stars. I'm Redbeard in the studio for the fanniversary of the Moody Blues, A Question of Balance.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Graham Edge of the Moody Blues.
I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues with Redbeard.
Thank you both. A Question of Balance, a thematic turning point for the English quintet. Instead of mind-tripping inside one's head, the band's newfound international popularity and travel made the Moodies aware of the complex issues of the real world. Here's bass player John Lodge, followed by Moody's drummer Graham Edge.
I think, you know, we were there as well with everyone else. I mean, we were looking for lofty things as well. I mean, we were searching just like everyone else, because we all came all through the same period of time as everyone else with us, you know, then. And the world was expanding and opening up so quickly. There were so many things bombarding us, so many religions, so many things that were going on. But at the same time, the two things that really hit me, that when you're actually standing on stage in a pair of jeans and a T-shirt, you know, that's what I am. I'm from a 15-year-old rock and roller.
There was a certain pressure on us at the time that we felt very strongly. John put it really strong in I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band. There was not everyone, of course, but there was a certain number of people over here that were elevating us to some sort of semi-deity status, and we didn't want that and didn't like that and weren't that at all. And so there's a couple of times we just tried to say, just because we were part of that generation, we were asking all the same questions, which have been so wonderfully answered now in so many ways, I think. I was looking at the legislation going through at the moment about handicapped peoples, what you're going to put through here in America, which I think is a gem of democracy, an absolute flower of democracy. I think it's a wonderful thing to be doing, you know, emancipating 54 million Americans. You know, we not patting ourselves on the back. That generation did a lot. And all we were doing, we were vocalising the questions that all our generation were asking. But a lot of people thought, because we were asking the questions, we knew the answers.
Yeah, that's right.
For someone to change my life, there lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the road that I must choose. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew, could safely lead me to the land that I once knew. The land as we grow old, the secrets of our soul. Not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will be.
The song Question, sung by Justin Hayward, was a worldwide hit in 1970 from the album A Question of Balance. It went to number one in their home UK. By this time, the Moody Blues had introduced the Mellotron to their sound. It's a crude keyboard tape recorder hybrid with a distinctive orchestral choral sound. On tour, the Mellotron was notoriously unreliable, but Moody Blues bass player John Lodge said they insisted on narrowing the gap between the studio and the stage.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you've got to have a set of standards, and it's amazing. If you do set standards for yourself and ground rules, it's surprising how further down the road it all comes to rest. People don't realize. And I think this is why so many people find themselves in such a mess personally. With their head physically or with relations or whatever, is because they don't set the ground. They don't realize that it's going to come back and hit you wallop like a truck.
And it's cumulative.
It's absolutely cumulative, yeah, absolutely.
How is it we are here on this path we walk, in this world of pointless fear filled with empty talk? Descending from the eighth, the scientists please all think, will they save us in the end? We're trembling on the brink. Men's mighty mind machines digging in the ground, stealing rare minerals where they can be found. Concrete caves with iron doors bury it again, while a starving, frightened world fills the sea with grain. A love is like a fire burning inside. A love is so much higher, can't be denied. She sends us
digging in the ground, stealing rare minerals where they can be found. Concrete caves with iron doors, bury it again, while a starving, frightened world fills the sea with grain. We are here. How is it we are here?
With Mike Pinder's Mellotron and an early Moog synthesizer prominently featured, How Is It We Are Here came from the album A Question of Balance. Again, John Lodge in the studio.
It was the fact that we'd sat down and we were actually, in our songs, saying where we were at that particular point in journey of our life. And I think on Question of Balance, that was what we were doing then. With Graham was talking about the song he'd written for his son, a minstrel song. It was us going along, doing exactly what we were doing, trying for us to understand what we were doing as well.
It was about this time that rock music began to reflect the big issues of the day: the Vietnam War, assassinations of leaders, the civil rights movement in the U.S., and the threat of global annihilation at the flick of a thermonuclear switch. Here's guitarist, singer, songwriter, Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues.
You know, I've learned the importance of music, and I've also learned the triviality of music. You know, it's wonderful, it makes us all feel great, but it's probably just above ice cream in the level of sort of importance. But it does have the, it does have the capacity to make the world a better place, more so than any other thing, entity, person, medium I've ever known in my whole life. That's why it is so wonderful. As a European, as I am, you know, I know that music, it was more responsible than any politician's voice, no matter what anybody says, in breaking down the barriers between the part of Europe that I live in and the part of Europe that my neighbours live in. And the Voice of America and the British Broadcasting Corporation and those people that were beaming, well, maybe their own kind of rock and roll, you know, into the East, made the difference. I swear, their generation grew up and was changed because of music, and so it does know no barriers.
Justin Hayward easy rocker with the Chuck Berry Chug called It's Up to You is from the Moody Blues album A Question of Balance in 1970. Still to come, Justin, John Lodge, and Graham Edge learn that international stardom has its obvious perks, but comes with hidden trapdoors as well. Visit In the Studio on Facebook, and be sure to visit inthestudio.net to find out what you've missed. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the Moody Blues, A Question of Balance.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Graham Edge of the Moody Blues.
I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues with Redbeard.
Thanks again, guys. The 1970 album, A Question of Balance. The Moody's number one album in the UK, number three in America. By late 1970, the Moody Blues were in demand on both sides of the Atlantic, touring constantly when not recording four albums in 2 years. What could possibly be the downside of this level of popularity? Moody Blues guitarist, singer, songwriter Justin Hayward fills us in.
From about 1970, when we really achieved what I suppose, looking back now, you'd call sort of mega stardom, particularly in America, where there's a number of other groups coming through. We were just probably before Led Zeppelin, but Led Zeppelin were coming with us, and then there was a number of other groups. We'd become more enclosed and sort of closeted, you know, with private planes, limos everywhere. There was no one. It was a very close sort of circle. It's very hard to get into that circle. And I was 19 when I joined the band, and through this period of my life, I'd done all of my growing up in the band, and I didn't have any life. I didn't actually have a life as I didn't exist as a person.
I've been searching for my dream 100 times today. I build them up, you knock them down like they were made of clay. Then the tide rushes in and washes my castles away. Then I'm really not so sure which side of the bed I should lay. I should lay. You keep looking for someone to tell your troubles to. I'll sit down, yet I'll hear nothing new. Then the tide rushes in and washes my castles away. Then I'm really not so sure which side of the bed I should lay. I should lay. Washes in and washes my castles away. Then I'm really not so sure which side of the bed I should lay. I should lay. Blackbird sitting in a tree, observing what's below. Acorns falling to the ground, he'll stay and watch them grow.
Written and sung by Moody Blues flautist Ray Thomas from the album A Question of Balance. To fully appreciate the sophistication of the production and the musicianship on these early Moody Blues albums, I want you to seek out the fabulous 5.1 surround sound remastered CDs that are now available from the UK. John Lodge contends that the Moody's maintain the highest level of sound quality for you and me.
But what we have done, we've gone back to the original masters for all the tunes that are on the album. And so we're really pleased, you know, that we've had a lot of researchers go out and working for us, and they've gone through all the tape stores, all the old studios, and we've got all the original tapes. And so, you know, they should sound magnificent because, you know, obviously we take them direct from there to digital and then straight on to, you know, the CD, which should be superb.
There's a sublime song near the end of the album A Question of Balance called Melancholy Man, written and sung by Moody Blues keyboard player Mike Pinder, that drummer Graham Edge and bass player John Lodge felt needed little embellishment.
It was an obvious, brilliant song. It was one of those ones. He played it at the piano. And it was one of those ones that was so complete as a song, you knew that you got to keep it simple. You know, you knew straight away that you didn't need to do a lot to that. All you needed to do was reinforce the harmonics that were coming off the piano, just strengthen the left hand by putting some drums, but not push through the left hand, just strengthen it. Just record the whole thing, just making the piano bigger. And let the song, because without changing the chord sequence, the two different melody lines, and then the way the two melody lines intertwined, would, if you'd have over-orchestrated it, it would have actually spoiled that. And just the simplicity and the beauty of it was what got us all.
You know, one of the things, I think it was the first time Moog had actually been used on a real record, and the instrumental part is a Moog. Bom 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 bom. That was a Moog synthesizer.
Great big blocks of things with all plug boards. It looked like a telephone, old-fashioned telephone exchange, didn't it? Yeah, I remember that. Yes.
That's the first time I think we'd ever used
Moog.
Moog, especially as a dominant. Yes, it's the very first synthesizer. Didn't have a keyboard, but I remember. I can't remember how we used it now.
You had to sequence it. It was all that long line of buttons. And it was murder to set up, because if you altered this one here, everything else shunted down.
Shunted down.
So you had to stretch everything all along. It wasn't like sequences.
And
now,
you could see the lights going along each note.
I'm a melancholy man. That's all what I am. All the world surrounds me and my feet are on the ground. I'm a very lonely man, doing what I can. All the world astounds me and I think I understand that we're going to keep growing. Wait and see. When all the stars are falling down into the sea and on the ground, and angry voices carry on the wind, a beam of light will fill your head, and you'll remember what's been said by all the good men this world's ever known. Another man is what you'll see, who looks like you and looks like me, and yet somehow he will not feel the same. His life caught up in misery, he doesn't think like you and me, 'cause he can't see what you and I can see.
stars are falling down into the sea. And on the ground, and angry voices carry on the wind. A beam of light will fill your head, and you'll remember what's been said by all the good men this world's ever known. Another man is what you'll see, who looks like you and looks like me, and yet somehow he will not feel the same. His life caught up in misery, he does not think like you and me, 'cause he can't see what you and I can see. I'm a melancholy man, that's what I am. All the world surrounds me and my feet are on the ground. I'm a very lonely man, doing what I can. All the world astounds me and I think I understand that we're going to keep rolling. Wait and see.
And all the stars are falling down.
I'm a melancholy man, that's what I am. All the world surrounds me.
Melancholy Man from the Moody Blues, A Question of Balance. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Justin Hayward, John Lodge, and Graham Edge. For interviews and exclusive live performances by the biggest names in rock, visit inthestudio.net. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Barbarossa Limited Productions. Copyright 2010, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunat. Theme song by Andy Timmons. From inthestudio.net.